amplify the signal by liking, subscribing, commenting, and sharing this video. Let's get started.
Welcome back. Today, I have Andrew Tillman with me, the founder of the Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation, and you're a member of the Illinois Bitcoin Council, and you also run the Midwest Bitcoin Summit. What's your title?
Yeah, so I'm the CEO and co-founder. There's two other co-founders for the Midwest Bitcoin Summit, so that's how you describe my role.
CEO. Okay, great. So I'm excited about that. I would love to be there for that event. I'm finding out about all these Bitcoin events. And, you know, you invited me to your event recently for the Scholarship Foundation, which was so much fun and meeting so many cool Bitcoiners. So thank you for inviting me there. And just for everyone, I met Andrew through, you know, some meetups that we had in Chicago. So we got to meet each other there. Mm-hmm, in Elmhurst. And it's just nice seeing Chicago do more, you know, more Bitcoin meetups and people getting together. So, and we met through Andrew from the Illinois Bitcoin Council. He introduced us. So thank you for being here today. Thank you for joining me for your first podcast so we could talk about some of the exciting things you're doing to, you know, empower people and educate people. And it's just such an amazing movement. So I can't wait to get into your story. So tell us how, before Bitcoin, what were you doing before Bitcoin? And, you know, we'll just kind of start there.
Yeah. So my background is actually chemical engineering. And, you know, I went to school at Western Michigan University. I started like more or less focusing within chemical engineering on like biochemical pharmaceutical area of like the engineering practice. And, you know, the biomedical the biochemistry side was interesting to me at first, but I moved away from that pretty early on because I was just not focused on pharmaceuticals. I kind of had like maybe a Bitcoiner's perspective on the pharma industry at an early age where I thought they were not doing politically correct way of saying not doing their best job at like approaching medicine or approaching like drug development. So I actually landed my first job in engineering in the paper industry, which was more or less like kind of a great opportunity. Like that brought me out to Ohio. And so it was a brand new greenfield project. So like a completely brand new build of a paper mill. So I was doing project management. It was like me and, 25 other engineers. We built like a large paper mill in 2 years, which is crazy. $1 million job back then, or project rather. And so that's what kind of brought me from Michigan, where I grew up, to Ohio. And I spent way too much time in Ohio. Told myself when I was young, I would never live in Ohio, but you know, there I was. So I spent 6 years in Ohio and, you know, I wanted to get out of the paper industry because it wasn't really for me. There's not like a huge job career path there. It's kind of the same old day in and day out. So, even before that, backtracking a little bit before this, in college, I was helping a friend start up a medical marijuana processing lab in Michigan before there was even like licensing to do so. So it's kind of like this gray period. Where you could be like a caregiver and you could have patients under your name and you could be growing plants for them. And, you know, like it was all very, very gray because there was no actual formal licensing for processors or, you know, it was just like retail and testing facilities. But anyway, so I had a little brief stint in cannabis processing, and by literally pure happenstance, there was a cannabis processor that was starting up in my, like near my house in Ohio. And so I reached out to the owners, got involved with them. They didn't really know what they were doing. And so I went from paper engineering to starting up a medical marijuana processor like overnight, which was really fun because it was like from ground up, you know, it was just like an empty building essentially. And so I got to make it into a lab, you know, standardize all the processes, develop like the initial product launches, the packaging, everything.
So this was after the paper mill, did you move away from Ohio at that point to do this?
No. Yeah, I was living in Lima, Ohio the entire time, actually. Lima's like central western Ohio. And so the paper mill was just south of there in Wapakoneta. And then, yeah, the cannabis processor was 10 minutes down the road in a small town called Spencerville. And so it was just like purely out of habit. And the whole time I was at the paper mill, the only thing I knew before this was like cannabis. So I was like, all right, I got to get back into cannabis. Everybody in the cannabis space was telling me I need 10,000 hours in order to be a lab manager or, you know, okay, well, the industry's only been around for like a few years, so I don't know how you expect anyone in this region to have 10,000 hours. But, you know, anyways, it was just like pure luck that I was just looking for a cannabis job to be a processor. And then found it right next door. You know, it was like literally a 5-minute drive for me. So kind of these serendipitous moments in my life. But the entirety of this time prior to Bitcoin, or, you know, I guess leading up to this, I was a Bitcoiner the entire time, learning and digesting all that stuff. So Bitcoin was along that journey the whole way. But yeah, I mean, my background's engineering.
So you went and used your engineering, the degree you were using for the pharmaceutical portion of your life. You stepped away from that, then you came back and used it for something you were passionate about.
Yeah.
And, you know, along the way you had learned about Bitcoin. Were your friends into Bitcoin and stuff? Is that how you got involved with that? Or was it just you?
Yeah, there's like two of us really. So it was my best friend from high school, Yash, is directly the reason why I got into Bitcoin, because he, you know, stayed in community college while I was at Western Michigan, and he would come up and he would hang out and part. And every single time he'd come up, he would just like force feed me Bitcoin. I'm trying to study, you know, engineering. I'm like, yeah, whatever. And then, you know, just kept being this reoccurring theme. And he got it from our other friend, Jake, who's watching InfoWars, being a conspiracy theorist, and like Max Kaiser's on there screaming about Bitcoin. Like it all just kind of like ripple effect from our, you know, social circle. Eventually, you know, in like 2015, I started to like listen, and I started buying, and then, you know, just continuously, and then just like learning a little bit more. You know, this is like early days, so it, like, there wasn't like a lot of information, but I just remember in 2017 the price exploding, and it just broke my brain. Like I couldn't believe what I was like watching it go from like $200 to $2,000, $5,000, and it was just like this monumental shift in my mental state where I'm like, what the hell is this thing?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, very deep into like 2018, into the like the rabbit hole, the so-called rabbit hole, and I don't think I ever came out. So yeah,
I love that. Did you feel that when you saw that, it really got you to wonder why this thing is exploding in price? So you wanted to take the time to learn it, but did you get sucked into altcoins at all? Did you get it right away that Bitcoin was different?
I have a pretty clean track record, actually. So the only thing I did was I bought into the whole gold versus silver narrative when like Litecoin was around. And so I did buy a little bit of Litecoin. So I'm like, yeah, that kind of makes sense, right? You know, like, you know, faster. And like, it's just it made sense to that. It was a good marketing scheme behind it. But then, you know, Lightning Network kind of came around and it was more mainstream. And then I understood that. And then I was like, okay, yeah, well, you know, obviously, you know, like layer twos are like the future. It's not some other altcoin or something like that. It was a very brief stint. So other than that, I never bought another shitcoin or altcoin. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on this, but yeah.
And for just knowing about, yeah, I don't care. You know, it's like we do it here. It's like being real is people appreciate authenticity. So it's just, that's what we call them. So, but that's the thing. It's very rare to not, you know, go through this mania of 100 different coins, you know, trying to figure out which one's the next big thing. But if Bitcoin is, like Michael Saylor says, the digital Manhattan, the bedrock of the city, and then everything's built on top, then we see things getting built on top of the most valuable network. Something that has the network effect and all the people using it, nothing can compete with that, you know, especially because it's unchangeable. So that's what we love. And I like to say unchangeable instead of immutable. So if anyone's watching, sometimes they hear immutable and they don't know what exactly that means. It just means that, you know, it is incorruptible. Nobody can change the rules of the game.
Yeah. You know, I wish I could like go back in time and understand like where my head was every single year that I was in Bitcoin. But like as my professional career took off as an engineer, I was like always the one guy, and especially in Ohio. Like, I don't know, I guess I did live in the right parts of Ohio because apparently there's a pretty good base of Bitcoin is there. But where I was at, there was nobody into Bitcoin. So I was like the only person inside the, you know, the paper mill, like telling everybody, hey, you should learn about Bitcoin. It's going to, you know, go to the moon, blah, blah, blah. And I was very focused on price back then, but like everybody hated me or loved me. And it was just very binary in that sense. Orange pilled quite a few people, and like my ability to communicate about Bitcoin has improved quite a bit over the years. And that, I don't know, that passion, that like obsession that I've had trying to get people involved, trying to like educate people, has deepened my understanding of money or the humanitarian side to Bitcoin, or like how it can impact society in a real way instead of just, you know, number go up. And that's really like, I think a lot of people start there. I started there. It really kind of feeds into like what I'm doing today.
I'd love that, because when you spoke at the event that you had for the Scholarship Foundation, you know, it comes from a place of you wanting to create a better world around you and see the future prosper. And I mean, it is just, this is just the beginning. Like, so happy that you had this idea and you're doing something. It's a lot of people have ideas, but they just don't do anything about it. And you being in Bitcoin for this long and just seeing how it's impacted your life and how it could help other people, can you explain the scholarship fund, the Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation for people?
Yeah. I'll start with the premise. Like, basically, I've lived in the Midwest my whole life. I've spent every single day in the Midwest, really, outside of traveling for, pleasure. But I've been in not the major cities. I've been in the Rust Belt cities that were once manufacturing hubs. And whether it's like Jackson or Albion, Michigan, or wherever, like, I just see decimated cities. And I've been close with those communities because I've lived in them. I was a part of them. Living in Lima, Ohio is the same thing. It was used to be like a very, petro-focused type of area, high jobs, high paying jobs, like a plentiful job market. And it's just not like that anymore. And obviously, like, as Bitcoinists, we understand why that is, but really the core of why I started the Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation is because I want to change that. And it started in like the Midwest and in my head, but like it applies everywhere. And so the idea is that how do we bring back solid opportunity and jobs and like an economic foundation for everywhere in the country, really, because this is going to be a national federated model. But to me, it's like, okay, we can't bring those manufacturing jobs back because the labor market is just not competitive on a global scale. So like it's just going to be highly inflationary to bring back meaningless manufacturing jobs. And so like my only solution that came into my head is like, well, A, you need to educate people, you need to educate the children, the next generation. You need to teach them about what money is, give them that like basic skill set, understanding what money is, economics, everything that they need to like actually kind of navigate the world in today's society, which is you need to be a pseudo macro economist in order to even understand what's going on. Like, let's give them that base. And then second, give them opportunity. And like, I can't give them jobs. I can't, I could to some degree, but like, I'm not Amazon, right? So how do you give them opportunity that's economically empowering? You give them the best form of money possible. You give them Bitcoin. And you don't give them Bitcoin to a degree that they can go trade it right away, but you give it to them in a way that they get to visibly experience and view and observe Bitcoin over a long duration of time, which teaches them time preference. So it's two parts. It's education and then the scholarship, which is the form of opportunity that I want to give to them. And you can give every kid that's living in poverty that experience and that asset. You'd have like waves of kids unlocking, education and like the physical economic like realities that are around them where they can start a job and they can pay off their debts, they can get out of their situation, whatever it may be. I don't really care. But like that's my dream. That's what I wanted to do. And it's been in my head for many years and I finally, pulled the trigger on it.
Finally found like there's an answer, there's a tool, something that can actually help you make this dream a reality. And it's a scary thing to think about the future. And when you think about how will these people ever get out of it if they don't have some sort of opportunity, to think that there's so many kids in the world that if you can't teach the parents, you can give them a chance. If there's people that just don't want to listen, you could bypass that and just give. And again, I love that they won't be able to trade it. I love that Bitcoin is you'd have this time locking feature where they can watch this asset grow for 25 years. So they'd have to see the ups and downs. They can't touch it, but they just see over time that it's just going up. And you doing this it's inspiring because you've had this idea. You just decided to go for it. So I love what you're doing and good job for taking the initiative and getting it going.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, it's really rewarding, honestly, in the short period of time that we started this. It's been maybe a little over 2 months now. We essentially partnered indirectly with the Alt-Belt Garden, just a Southside Chicago project, which is like a forgotten community. And the story there is absolutely amazing. Like it really, the Alt-Belt was like the original court case for environmental protection. And like, I don't know, do you know the history of the Alt-Belt? I'm not butchering it, but like
a little bit. I've learned about it from Tobias and what he's been doing, but I don't know too much. So yeah, go ahead and tell us about the area.
Yeah. One reason why I know about it is because like on a detour one time when the traffic was bad coming out of Chicago, like we drove past it and it's just like mind boggling when you see this community because it's just so out of place. It's like in the middle of nowhere and it's just massive, probably like 100 acres, 200 acres of just like the same exact structurally, like the similar buildings. It kind of looks like almost like a prison, but not really, you know what I mean? Because everything's just uniformly the same. But the background on the alt-gov is after World War II, there was like a lot of black families that were veterans that had nowhere to go. And so the government at the time gave them the alt-gov and built the alt-gov for like black veterans to like have a place to stay after the war. What they didn't tell them was it's like a toxic wasteland, and there's a ton of like industrial waste that was dumped there. And it's completely far away from like all the white communities at the time. And so it was like a really racist like thing that they did, like legitimately just a racist thing in history that nobody even knows about really. And so they're just like, there's no like stores around, there's no transportation, there's no train. Like for a long time, I'm not sure if the, you know, transportation infrastructure is still like this, but I'm sure there's still buses and stuff. But at the time it was just like desolate, kind of off to the side, like, here you go, go look over there.
Your goal there, you're a veteran, you're fighting for this country.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where they, that's what they do. They're like, we're going to isolate you. I'm excited to announce my new website, bitcoinnova.store, for clothing, accessories, and even pieces with a QR code so you can amplify the Bitcoin Nova signal and bring more people to the channel to learn about Bitcoin. You'll also find playlists from this channel and from the Hive Minded channel, the projects I support, including bitcoinblacksheep.com, affiliate links, and everything Nova related, all in one place. And don't forget to check out IllinoisBitcoinCouncil.org. $50 in fiat or sats goes a long way to paint Illinois orange. The greater the nodes, the stronger the network.
It's been just in deeply impoverished since then. Like they've never like been able to claw their way back out. There's no opportunity, there's no jobs, nothing. It's just been right from the get-go, kind of just a broken system given to them. And nobody even like talks about it. No one even like thinks about it. But really the first environmental like court case that was won, it was like on the Alabama Gardens, talking about like the environmental like toxicity and the dumping of like industrial chemicals. And I don't know the full details, but that's essentially the gist of it. But yeah, it's an interesting place. And so there's around like 2,000 children that are living in poverty there. As you said, Tobias Shepherd, who is front running spearheading rather the Alt-Gov Garden Bitcoin Reserve. And so that is like a project all on its own that I've been, kind of side by side assisting him. And it's really the first communal Bitcoin reserve that he's trying to start. And he actually, I've been talking to him for a long time that he should make this a 501c3, and he's actually pulled the trigger on that. So now I think the funding for it's going to be much easier because he did have it as a DAO LLC. So I think everything's just going to go smoothly on that front. I think his, mission is going to be very easy. He's very well connected. And I think we'll see in the South Side Chicago for the first time a Bitcoin reserve for the community, which is, for the Alcala Gardens, which is beautiful.
And it's the first in the nation. Like he had this idea too, and you're helping him. So it was a DAO at first. So is that what the Illinois Bitcoin Council and the Bitcoin Scholarship Fund have, the 501c3 that you said? Is that the same?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. That's great that you're, collaborating, you're, giving each other ideas, showing what's working, or what's a better fit, for getting funding or whatever he wants to build. And even him, it's like you can do things, you can have an idea, you can make the world better. You can, Bitcoin makes the world better if you inject Bitcoin into whichever system it is or whichever charity. And just seeing that people are doing this for others, because when you've been in Bitcoin for a while, you care because you're trying to save yourself, but then that's why we talk about Bitcoin all the time to other people, because we want to also lend a hand and save them too once we find out what's going on and how we've been lied to. So after a while, you talk, you orange pill a bunch of people, but then you're like on the next level right now. Like you've done those things and now it's time for you to do something bigger. Like you're realizing that I can help people by telling them about it, or I can help people by building, these types of foundations, or putting my ideas into the world and just actually seeing how it can transform things. So it's like the next level of a Bitcoiner is like, you want to keep helping, but you're helping in a bigger way.
Yeah. I think, you're spot on with that. I spent so much of my time learning about the market, learning about economics, learning about like the principles of money, that I kind of like hit a point where I'm like, yeah, I could go deeper into economics, I could go deeper into finance and like investments and all that, but like I feel like I'm at a good place where I got my master's degree in Bitcoin. Like I understand it well enough. And I don't really have the same dopamine reactions that I used to have when I listened to like economic podcasts or listen to the spaces where everyone's talking about the charts. And it's like, I already know like Bitcoin's just going up, right? And to me, it's going up forever because like at the end of the day, when we hyper Bitcoinize the world, every economic improvement and innovation inside the global economy just like further strengthens the purchasing power of Bitcoin. You know, the days of USD when they're long gone, it's just your purchasing power gets stronger because humans innately just innovate, right? We just are going to make things more efficient, cheaper, right? And like, so Bitcoin will forever go up because humans will forever innovate. So I don't really have to worry. I just don't care anymore. That's just the truth in my head. So the next question is, well, how do we make sure this world that I live in, or this community, or this state, or this city, whatever, how do we make sure that doesn't fall apart? That's my main focus right now. Because great, I got Bitcoin, you got Bitcoin. Okay, cool. The Bitcoin is a good. What about everybody else? Because I promise you, everyone else does not know about it, understand it, or even own it. And so, like, that's my focus. It's like, well, okay, I'm good. My family's good. What about the place I grew up in? How do I save this? That's the motivation, really, for me. It's like I want to save my communities that I live in and that I care about. You know, that's why the foundation is such a strong, powerful
Yeah.
mission in my head.
Plus, as a human, I think that the current system, there's so many people that are the most wealthy that look around and see everyone else suffering, and it doesn't bother them. It feels like you need to step on people to climb up to the top, and that's how that system works. But when you're in Bitcoin, you are happy when you're doing well, but it makes you sad when other people aren't. You know, you don't like to see the pain in the world, and you don't like to see what the fiat system does and how it tramples over people and kills people with forever wars and all the stuff that happens, you know. But when you become a Bitcoiner, yeah, you do care. You want to grow. You're thinking my future looks bright, but I don't want to live in a future where I'm looking at everyone else and they're suffering. You know, I want to look in a future where other people are also doing well, because this should reshape the world. This type of technology should like spread like a virus, but a good virus, you know, and actually heal, you know, everybody's lives, because it's people are so sick, you know, they're sick for all different reasons, because they're working too much, they don't have time to take care of themselves. There's like, it literally can make you sick because you just are struggling to get by, you know. So seeing that you can, you know, want to live in a world where everybody is better, that's the future you envision. You're like, I don't want to be in some ivory tower looking down at destruction. That's not how Bitcoiners think, but I feel like that's what fiat looks like.
Yeah, I mean that is the path that we're heading on. And you can look at it politically, right? Like both sides are getting more polarized. And like, I don't know. I don't really tap into the political spectrum. I don't really care. To me, it's all theatrics and it has real world impacts, you know, at the ground level. But as we stress out our population economically, there will be more violence, there'll be more crime, there'll be more political violence, there'll be more radicalization. And so, like, what are we going to do? Just let the fiat system collapse and like we become Rome essentially? And like the bigger your economy, the bigger like your country is, the harder it will fall. And so I'm very terrified of the future for America if we don't embrace Bitcoin. And that's why I'm trying to do it, you know, the federal government, all that stuff, like I think they'll figure it out. But that
Yeah.
doesn't help the communities, that doesn't help the families. And so
Right.
how do I do that? Well, I have to go land on the ground floor, and you know, and that's what I'm going to do. And I hope to federate this and get people behind me to do the same thing in their community and have that grassroots adoption before this thing blows up to $100 trillion USD or
Yeah.
whatever market cap.
That is so smart. It's now is a great time, you know, because it's still at the point where we have such a small amount of the world that's even understanding it. So, and you are just the idea of federalizing it. Is that
Federating. Yeah,
federating it?
federating.
I'm saying federalize, federating it. Okay. So the idea of doing that is you're giving everyone the blueprint to follow the steps that you took. You know, you're giving everyone the same opportunity to do the same thing, and you've already done it, you know. So you know, it's enabling other kids to be able to have. I mean, I, as a Bitcoiner, out of, you know, people are always donating to this charity or that charity, but I would donate to a Bitcoin charity, not only because you're helping in this way where you're helping low-income children and giving them a chance and you're educating them, but
When you're talking about nonprofits, a lot of what nonprofits do is immediate, like, aid, which is great because you need that, right? People need immediate aid. What mine is like immediate education and persistent continuous education. But the aid element, the financial element is delayed, and which is super important and intentional. And I don't know if I actually like hit on this point. You did after I kind of explained the two-tier system for the Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation. But yeah, the scholarship will be time-locked for each child until the age of 25. So they'll be an adult at the age that they'll be able to unlock the Bitcoin or whatever the value of that Bitcoin will be, initially $500. But that's super important and intentional on my part. And hopefully the IRS approves us on the 501c3 tax exempt status. I think we'll be good because we have educational aspects. But we want to have them have this experience of owning an asset, skin in the game in that asset, and watching the market that's highly volatile or historically has been highly volatile, and seeing 4-year cycles or whatever the, you know, new norm becomes, but like the liquidity cycles at the very least. Like they will get to see things, whether they understand it or they don't, and they'll just start recognizing patterns. Like imagine a 5-year-old watching Bitcoin go from $500 in its wallet to like, $200 and, you know, freaking out a little bit, and then going up to $2,000 and coming back down to $1,300, like for years, but never having the ability to touch it. What kind of like lessons does that teach them? Because they still have the emotional response. They just can't make any actionable mistakes with their Bitcoin, you know?
Also, it's interesting because these are all children who would be able to have access to see how their wallets are growing. So at the same time, their parents would be watching their children's funds, and the parents are going to be seeing like, okay, this is going up, I should get some. But then they are able to touch their Bitcoin. They might sell it and get, I should sell it. And then they'll keep playing these games, trading back and forth. Meanwhile, our kids' funds will keep just rising in price over time because, you know, so they'll see the difference between access. I was trading it. I'm so glad my kid had this where they couldn't have that human greed involved and they just let it grow. But then over time, once they see it a couple times, trade a few times, they might start learning and be like, all right, I'm going to just save my money in Bitcoin and let it do the same thing that my kid's fund is doing. So it could teach the parents as well as the kids.
I think you're absolutely right. And I've never actually thought about that. I think we'll like indirectly orange pill the parents because like they'll be involved in the education. I mean, right now, I have one experience, well, multiple experiences, but one experience directly in front of a community of people. So yesterday I was at in the Austin neighborhood at the Rock of Our Salvation Church. Pastor Rob, I don't know if you met him at my event. But
yes, Craig, I did.
Amazing dude. And he invited me to church and, you know, he said he'd give me like 10 minutes to go up on stage and talk about the foundation and everything. And so I did. I went up there and talked about it. Afterwards, there was probably at least, you know, 15 kids that are so excited to get their first Bitcoin wallet. And like they were asking which app to download. And because we're likely going to partner with Unchained on this, I was like, download Unchained. But then there was at least, you know, 15, 20 adults that came up and they were interested in Bitcoin, learning more about money. They have maybe adult children that they want to get involved in this. And so the education is for everybody, right?
Right.
The financial life aspects of this, unfortunately, like when we spend money on the child in need, they have to be under the living under poverty essentially. So like we can't just give everybody $500 of Bitcoin and time lock it. But the education is for the community. And so like with the IPC, I was on the phone with Tim today. We're going to be doing What is Money seminar, an intro to Bitcoin on January 18th at the Rock of Our Salvation Church. The community is so embracing of this.
When is that?
January 18th, which is a Sunday. So a little bit further out, but it gives us time to plan everything. And yeah, this is going to be our pilot zone between the Old Grove Gardens and the Rock of Our Salvation Church. I mean, that's where we're going to start. And between that, we got like 2,000 children. So.
And I think I told you about that pastor, Ben Haley, that I had spoken to on my show, and I had met him in Vegas, actually, for the Bitcoin conference. And I hope that him and Pastor, I forgot his name,
Rob.
Pastor Rob, there we go. I'm terrible with names. Pastor Rob, I'll get it. So I hope that the two of them connect and just trade ideas and go back and forth because he's building a Bitcoin reserve for his church. And it's just the best way to save money for your church. You know, it's like you're saving and something that's just disintegrating and it's not helping grow your future. So I hope that they connect. And what I was going to say earlier, I remembered. The great thing about this is, you know, when you want to donate to any charity, there's so many times in your life that you say no and you don't donate to that charity because we've all heard and seen how people have been manipulated to donate to things that none of the money ever goes to the, you know, to the charity. So it's sad because so many times you'll see something, you know, donate for this. And most people say no, because they're like, I don't think it's going there, so I'm not going to donate. So most people don't trust that anyway. And even if you do, you have no idea how, what percent of the donation, maybe 1% of the total amount went to it and got stolen along the way, or who knows what happens to that money. But with these, what you're doing and time locking it, and with Bitcoin, you can create all sorts of charities. You can create all sorts of, you know, time locking where people can verify it and see it and know it's there and it's untouchable and no one has access to move it. And it is literally safe, secure, and it's actually going to where you want it to go. It's actually going to help a kid. You know, it's actually going to change their life. It's the only kind of, I would only want to donate to charities that are Bitcoin based and verifiable, you know, because that is, that's the ultimate. You want to do it then, you know, you're not just giving it to somebody that is, I don't know, just the things you've heard, you know, with Doge and all the things that happened. And, you know, you found out about a lot of stuff that didn't go where you thought. And it's just, it's sad. And you lose trust in those types of things. But Bitcoin brings back the trust when it comes to giving back.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, who knows where the money goes when you like donate to any charity. And then like they get so large and they become such like a, almost like a institution, even though they're not owned by anybody, but like they, I don't know. I have a trust issue. I think most Bitcoiners have a trust issue, right? Don't trust verify. Yeah. So like my goal is to quantify what is our cost per child, right? We have a curriculum, we have like materials, if we're going to give them drawing books and crayons, we have to like quantify what does that cost, include like inflation, and maybe hopefully get some sponsors to provide the materials that we need so we don't have to like pay out of pocket from the foundation, but build out like that fixed cost, right? And then everything else goes straight Bitcoin. And so like, let's say it's 90% of the funds that we receive through donations, 90% of the US dollars go straight into Bitcoin. And then what will be fun is for our foundation is we say, okay, we raised $100 million and we got $90 million given to these kids. Every single year we have like the same thing that the kid has, which is what's the value of that $90 million? And so maybe some years that might look bad in the public because it's in a downturn and the market's like a little bit bearish, but we'll have, absolutely have some bull markets on the way. And so we raised $90 million.
20, imagine
yeah, 20, right.
5 years. Like Bitcoin is
it's gonna be crazy.
Years old. Yes. So,
yeah.
And I know that people, you know, they don't understand the supply issuance. They don't understand how it's decreasing infinitely smaller throughout the years. They don't understand that part of it. But once you understand Bitcoin, that's why it's so powerful, because you know it and I know it and people that understand Bitcoin know it. So just imagining the last 16 years being worth fractions of a penny to being worth over about $100,000.
Yeah.
You know, 25 years after that is going to change these kids' lives.
Yeah. I mean, who knows where it'll be?
I mean, who knows?
But who knows where the dollar will be, you know?
Who knows? But that's the thing. It's you want it to be into something that is going to protect that energy, you know, spent. You know, that if you have it in dollars, then, you know, who knows where the dollar is going to be by then, that it's going to cost. Inflation will be crazy, and it's like the dollars will be so much less valuable, and it would be just, I don't know. It's a scary thing. Once you know about Bitcoin, you actually aren't, you feel like you're safe, and that's why you want to help others, because the fear that we feel for knowing we don't know where the dollar is going to be in 25 years, that's the same fear that makes you want to help, because, you know, again, starting off with talking to them about it to like just doing things that will help them anyway, you know?
I think, you know, my motivation to this, like, I mean, I kind of talk broadly or more generically about this situation, but I don't see a world where if you have fiat liabilities or you just own fiat, you're going to do like well into the future. We have systemic issues in every single government and every single economy directly related to fiat. You know, we have the greatest fiat currency of all time, the US dollar, right? Much of the U.S. dollar's strength has just been obviously because of post-World War II with the Bretton Woods Agreement. We held all the gold on behalf of a lot of the European nations, and, you know, strengthened our, you know, dollar and like the relative exchange to other currencies. But we have basically from the 70s on to today, we have strengthened the US dollar on a macro trade, and like in particular the petrodollar system. You know, a lot of the conflicts in the Middle East were directly tied to upholding the petrodollar system, ensuring that petro was sold in US dollars, which ensured that every foreign nation that was not a net exporter of oil had to have a US dollar base. And so like everyone, and most people understand this, but like that's just some breaking down, right? You know, you have entire like organized nations through BRICS that are trying to trade in any currency outside the US dollar. You have like China, who's globally like dominating the macro trade. And you know, the US dollar also, I mean, because of that circular loop, that financial hub of like the macro trade, and the reserves in the foreign nations feed directly right back into our financial markets, into our equity markets, into our treasury markets, our real estate markets. So if we don't like have that reserve, treasury US dollar in every foreign market, then everything starts to kind of break down on a financial market basis. Like the inflation becomes kind of realized at home as opposed to being offshore into foreign markets and fed right back into our financial markets. So I'm very pessimistic about that. I'm very pessimistic on the US dollar's outlook. I think it'll probably take longer to fall apart than maybe most people assume, but like the world going forward will be highly inflationary. And assets will inflate, and the people holding the assets will think they're getting rich. It's like Weimar Germany all over. You know, history repeats itself, or at least it rhymes, right? Yeah. And so I'm worried about the next 20 years. And I think if you have all your net worth in fiat liabilities, whether it's equities, treasuries, U.S., real estate, good luck, because like you need something uncorrelated to the dollar. And there's only two things that I think are good investments, and it's Bitcoin and it's gold. And gold, we already understand why it's failed. So why wouldn't you buy the asset that is better version of gold, digital gold? It is a currency. It's a medium of exchange. It's natively digital. You know that the nation states are going to use this for like cross-border payments and like macro trades. And it's worth $2 trillion or less than $2 trillion. Like this is a $100, $200, $300, $400, $500 trillion asset class. Why the fuck would you not buy that? You know, it's crazy. Yeah.
Well, even going back to the verifiability, it's, you know, they've had talks about auditing or, you know, checking Fort Knox to see if the gold is there. We don't even know if the gold is there. It could be all paper gold you're buying through the stock market. Not. I'm just saying, you don't know. It could be gold plated bars. I don't know what's there. You know, nobody knows. So I just think it could be mostly there, but maybe some missing, you know, whatever it is. But the point is, you think you're owning something, but you're just owning a piece of paper version, and you don't know what's actually there. With Bitcoin, you know exactly that you own Bitcoin when you own Bitcoin. And I love that
auditable, verifiable. Sorry.
Yeah. No. I love that you take the aerial view, you know, looking at the big picture, because that's why you're not interested in the news stories and the current, you know, this week's drama, what's going on with, you know, the markets up and down, whatever. And I think that that's what Bitcoin does to you. And that's why I love that you're talking about this on my show, because that's what my show is all about. We're not about trying to, you know, dissect the newest market trends or what's going on. We're looking at the big picture. We're seeing that, you know, the main idea of the dollar, you know, slowly losing power in the world. And that's all you need to know. You know, that's all you need to know. And you need to know Bitcoin and why it's the best tool for the job. But it's something that I love to think about, that, you know, becoming a Bitcoiner, and once you realize this stuff and you're not interested in some of these, you know, podcasts or financial market talk, you know, that you used to be interested in, it's like becoming a Bitcoiner starves the traditional system that feeds on your dopamine. Like you were talking about the dopamine hit that you get, and that dopamine hit is something that we're like cured from. We don't have that need for it anymore. And, you know, you know where this is going, so you don't need to waste your time, and our time is precious, you know, so we're not sitting there spending it trying to get dopamine hits off of crazy news and all this stuff. Like we're doing other things with our life, including what you're doing, making a better future for the world.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, for whatever reason, I guess discovered early in my like young adult life that social media is a toxic waste dump on my brain. And so I've like participated almost zero besides like being on X or Twitter and like using it as like my main like news outlet. But even Twitter, I went through like stints where I would just delete it for like months. Like, this is way too negative and way too just toxic. And like the algorithm kind of like pushes you into that direction, you know, like it gives you little like hooks of bait on there. And if you click on it and it's like, I don't know, ISIS video, and then it's like, oh, more ISIS videos. And it's like, get the shit out of here, you know?
I know.
And now that I'm like trying to push something that is going to be bigger than myself, I have inevitably have to be involved in social media. And so I'm back in it again. But yeah, like what a horrible, like go outside and fetch grass, go lift weights, go for a run, be with your family and friends, you know, eat healthy, get sunshine. That's like what really will make you happy.
Yeah.
And that's like what I've been
get sucked in. We can get so sucked in, but that's what I think is so great about, you know, you having events to spread the word to, sharing it, even though you have to be back on social media to do these things. But sometimes, you know, being on social media is sometimes the only place people feel connected when they're a Bitcoiner, because in real life you have zero, like you don't think you have anyone that understands you. So you feel like even if you're around people, you're like, oh, nobody, I can't talk to them. Like they don't get it. They're just talking about all the dopamine hit stuff and I don't want to deal with it. Like, it's just not something you're interested in anymore. So it's kind of like, you're like, oh, I'd rather go do something that's going to be productive. You feel like that's sometimes a waste of time, sadly. But I think that's why having events and seeing Bitcoiners in real life, it's one of those things that gets people to, you know, these meetups are great. I hadn't done them until recently. And that's, you know, where we had first met for one of the Elmhurst meetups. And it's been so much fun every time, you know, and my husband knows I'm Bitcoin obsessed and he loves Bitcoin, but he's not the same. Like he's more like the get me away and let's laugh and get away from it for a little bit and just have time. And I love that about him, because he grounds me. But when he's been around Bitcoiners, like this whole weekend that we were around, the same week we went to your event, and every time he's like, these people are so great. Like it's not like they're talking even about Bitcoin the entire time. Like, you know what I mean? It's like you already have this common passion and principles that you live by. And then you can actually just be happier and talk about anything without feeling like it's negative. You know, I feel like we talk more. So it just feels like such a good group of people to be around that are forward thinking, that are positive and hopeful, but also just fun. I don't know. We've met so many great people this week and met people in real life that I've been. So on social media, I like being on X because that's where a lot of the Bitcoiners live. That's what I like to focus on. I don't like to focus so much on the stories, but just kind of like connecting with people that I think are, you know, you've built like sort of little relationships. And then when people come out and meet you, it was great because so many people came out and you came out on Friday for the day one of our event. And I mean, it was just the most fun thing ever. It was so great being around everybody and everyone loved it. And I think people need that. You know, people can't just live online. You do need to touch grass, but you could do it with Bitcoin communities, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's been a very surreal thing for me, because literally 4 months ago, I've never been to a Bitcoin meetup. I've met like, yeah, never. I don't know why. I don't know. I literally have no idea why I never went
to
one.
Me too.
You know, I don't know. I've been just swimming in a sea of normies, and like, I'm a very vocal person. If I like something, like for instance, I was vegan for 4 years. I went carnivore for like a few months back here, and I mostly eat a meat based diet. When I was vegan, I was absolutely convinced, because of some stupid stuff, but I was convinced veganism was the best thing ever. And like, it was the best for your health, all this stuff. I told everybody to be vegan, you know. I'm just like very outspoken, and I've corrected this now as I'm getting older, but like, and I don't force feed it to people that don't want to hear it. But I used to just be that way with Bitcoin. I'm like, I don't give a shit what you think. I'm going to tell you how to save your life. Like, and you either hate me or you're going to love me. And like, a lot of people didn't like it, you know, but I was just widely outspoken. Now that I'm at these Bitcoin meetups, I'm just like, this is so weird, because like, I don't have to say those things to you. I don't know what I'm even going to say. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, we're just going to be normal people and hang out, you know, like.
And it's weird. It's such a weird thing. It's I felt the same way when we went to that place, the Bottle Theory meetup in Elmhurst. We started talking about the stuff that we say to normal people. We're like, wait, you already know that.
So, yeah, I know.
Like, I guess I'll talk about something else. So it's like, and then you just find out, you're just finding out about each other and just what they're into and all this cool stuff. And you feel like it's just so chill. And it's also everybody that you meet, to me, it seems in real life, it seems like everybody is so What's the word that everybody is humble? Like a lot of people, like they're not, nobody's
humble
like
and hopeful,
humble and hopeful. Yeah, where everybody else, there, it's like a, you know, I don't want to say it like measuring contest, you know, like everybody's trying to like out, like one up each other or just show off what they have or what they're doing. And it's not like that in Bitcoin. It's like, even if you do want to praise somebody for what they've done, it's very like, oh, thank you. But it's about like the people, you know, it's about, you know, everybody else that's, you know, nobody wants to just be like, because you just, I don't know, it's a whole different mindset. I don't know what it is. It's not like you're trying to look for praise or, you know, you just want to see a better world and you're happy. And I'm very, it's refreshing. It's refreshing and it's fun. So.
Yeah. I think when you like really get Bitcoin and you understand it, like all this anxiety just kind of goes away. Like this subtle anxiety that everyone in America and everyone in the world feels because of the fiat system. Like you may not understand why things are getting more expensive, but you know that they are and you feel it and you feel that pressure and that stress. When you don't understand that, like how anxious does that make you, whether you realize that that's the root of your anxiety or not? But like the number one problem in a family in America today is financial struggle. And like when you understand Bitcoin, you understand the problem and you understand the solution. And now you're just like, okay, I'm at peace. Like I found the life raft. I'm good. And like, you don't have that same kind of struggle where you're trying to just like either fill the void of like all this emptiness of like in despair with like distractions or addiction or whatever it may be. You're just like, I'm living a light life. It's like we went backward in time to like, really to me, but this is a financial revolution and it's a renaissance. And so like, I think we have a beautiful, you know, projected future ahead of us. But like the vibe I get from Bitcoiners is just hope and like clarity and peacefulness and like community. It's like, it's really nice.
It is. It's very, and that it's amazing to think that just a couple months ago, I started going and you just started going. It's almost like kind of connect. It's weird. Like this is kind of getting really deep into that. Like we think Bitcoin is everything, you know, but it's like the connected consciousness sort of thing. Why are we all like the timing of things and how we all are feeling this sort of like, let's do these things. A lot of people are doing them at a similar, you know, in a similar moment in time. And I'm only saying that connected consciousness recently because there was just too many coincidences lately with some of my friends. Somebody asked me like, oh, I'd like to give you an affiliate link for something, like one of the shirts I was wearing yesterday on a show that I did. I'm like, oh, that's so funny when you're saying that because I literally wore your shirt yesterday and it talked about your stuff. So it feels like it's like we were like, you know, transmitting or something. And then another person created a pair of shoes and I literally wore the same shoes on Sunday to breakfast with the Bitcoiners. And it was the first time I ever had worn them, but they were like these Bitcoin Nikes, or they weren't Bitcoin. They were orange Nikes. I just like, you know, the Dunks or whatever they're called, like Jordans. Yeah. So they're like the Bitcoin orange color. And he literally made the same exact color looking shoes, but with Bitcoin and Satoshi, like Satoshis on them, they're called. And I'm like, that is so weird that you just posted these and I just wore them. Like, he read my mind to make like a Bitcoin version. It's so weird. So, yeah, just you saying you just started going to these meetups. I wonder how many Bitcoiners hadn't done it before and they just all started going recently. And maybe the more they hear other people doing it, you know, they think, oh, that looks fun or people had a good time. I think I'll go to another one.
Yeah, so I actually have, I think, a solution to that. Like, I can't, like, get people to come out to these random meetups and stuff like that. But what I want to do, similar to, like, what you experienced with the 64 Wine Bar meetup, or it's the event, rather, right? It's a private event. And, like, it feels like, you know, a special occasion where these meetups are reoccurring and something. They're great because it gives you an outlet to, like, you know, connect with the Bitcoin community. What we're going to start doing once we get things more stabilized with the Midwest Bitcoin Summit, That's obviously for like conferences in the Midwest, but what we want to do is we're going to coin it possibly like the Bitcoin family reunion, and we'll do it in every major city in the Midwest. And so we'll take like, for instance, Dave and Buster's, and this is a model that came from, my partner, Lenny Berry. He's been doing this with the cannabis industry. We take a venue that has like activations, things that you can do and like fun things to like, entertain the crowd while they're there, not just like have the social element baked in, but basically bring everybody together once a year in every single city, give them a venue privately, like, it's a buyout. It's all for the Bitcoiners. You bring people from the community that are interested in Bitcoin, the politicians that are locally there. And then you just have like a major party for like 4 or 5 hours. And it's a lot of fun. It's great. And like, that's how you get people to really participate, because it kind of provides this exclusivity element. You buy a ticket for $20 or whatever, but it's a memorable event, something that you are going to look forward to every single year. And then that's kind of what we need. There's like gaps in the social community of Bitcoin from what I've noticed, because like I haven't been a part of it. We have these small little meetups, and we have these giant, massive conferences. And like there's nothing in between. We're like,
That is so true. You're right. Then it's like the big conferences, it's too much. And you just feel like you can't even connect with people because it's just too big. And then the small ones, it's like you want to kind of like open it up to another range. And that's great that's why people like you that have these ideas, you just started going to these and you're like, oh, we're missing something. We should do this. I think it's an amazing idea. And even my husband, like he loves it. Like he would love to go to these things. He even said like he was sitting at the bar at one point on the second day of our event. And the way that you said when you were vegan, you were talking about being a vegan nonstop, like the whole time to everybody. But like now you're a Bitcoiner and you did that for a while, but now you're like, okay, I can just do what I'm doing. I don't have to talk about it all the time. Like you evolve, right? But he thought that being around Bitcoiners, it would literally be like he wouldn't be able to talk to anybody because they would only talk about Bitcoin. But then he saw how everybody was, like their vibe, their energy, and how they were just really cool people, not trying to, I don't know, show off or whatever it was, just very welcoming and nice and happy. So he was just sitting by the bar and he was going to ask these people, like, maybe you want to come over here and hang out with some Bitcoin people? They're pretty cool. Like, he's just like, you guys might, maybe you'll learn something because they might bring it up, but like, they're just cool people. You might just start wanting to get Bitcoin because you realize it's a Bitcoin party and everyone's awesome. So it's like, just saying, this is what Bitcoiners are like. They're happy. They're hopeful. Do you want to be like that? Like that's kind of like, I don't know. It's almost like people don't see that, like that many people in one setting that are like that. So I think it's a great idea. The family reunion sounds amazing. I mean, we love it. I just think more people, when they see this stuff, they're going to want to do more things and actually it'll be their first time, getting out there and meeting some people.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you this, as soon as we get some sponsors, we're going to do some amazing stuff. Like I'm burning holes in my own pocket right now doing all this, but like when we start actually making money on the for-profit side and we have sponsors, like we're going to do crazy stuff. We're going to do it all over the place every month. Like my whole goal is just to orange pill the Midwest, and like, fortunately I'm living in like the third largest economy in the country, which is the Chicagoland area. I'm going to orange pill the shit out of this place. We all are, and it's going to be awesome, but I think what you're saying is like spot on. I want to take the normies almost everybody knows about Bitcoin at this point, but like really bring them into the community, because they don't know much about Bitcoin. They probably don't have any like negative preconceived notions of Bitcoiners unless they've met someone in person that was annoying. But like, I want to make Bitcoin, the community, the social interaction with the community really cool and enticing to the average person. And so we get the business owners and we get the politicians and we get the pastors and we get everybody that like has a network around them, and then we get them orange pill, and then that'll just spread,
Right.
Like that's how I see us.
You know, like, what would even be really a cool thought would be like, cause if you, a private event, I love it, but as a separate thing, just, I wonder how hard it would be. Like, how I'm Greek, so every year every Greek church has a Greek fest, and they like close off the street and they're out on the street and people walk by, they're not Greek, they come to the Greek fest, they're like, that was fun, like I get to see all the Greek stuff, and see the culture and see the food and whatever. So it's like the Bitcoiners, you could just be like, let's have a Bitcoin fest on the street and be like, people will pass by and be like seeing all the Bitcoiners that are coming there, the people working the things and how their personality is, and just seeing the vibe of Bitcoin people and how they are, you know, and who they are. And then it just kind of it attracts other people, because just the energy level is something that people are interested in, I think, once they see it.
I agree. I mean, that's what this is about, is inspiring others to take models that I'm not going to think about. You'll think about them, and then we have the community to pull it off, right? We just start doing things and like make it more normalized for, everyone has Greek Fest, or they have the farmers market. Like, let's just implement models that already work, but make it Bitcoin and like
Right.
just make it normalized for like the society around us. And
Yeah.
that's
And
really
until
what I
they
want
see
to
it,
do.
they think it's not normal, right? And I think getting rid of that idea for Bitcoiners, like we all like the pseudonymous anonymous idea, but we're not all Satoshi as much as we admire him, and we can't be Satoshi. But it's like, until you start showing that you are you and you use Bitcoin and you're part of this, then people see that, you know. So it's like, it's good to just stop staying in the shadows and getting out there and meeting people. And even like downtown Elmer is how you came over here, or you've been here before for the other meetup too. But downtown Elmhurst area, they even close down the street for certain events, and they do fests down here. And then I talked to my first business owner that I saw was a Square user, and it's this cupcake breakfast shop over here in Elmhurst. And I told her about, you know, the Bitcoin community, and I told her about, I think I might have mentioned it to you, but she did respond, and she's super excited. She goes, let me know when you guys have another event. I'd like to meet. I've been wanting to learn about Bitcoin, she even said. So I even sent her the YouTube video on how to get started with Square. I'm like, ask if you have any questions, I'm here, you know, like I'll help you. But she seems very positive and happy. So it's like, even if you reach out to whatever fest area it's going to be, just the local businesses, and say, hey, do you also use Square, or do you want to accept Bitcoin for this stuff? So there's so many things you can do. It's an exciting future, and it's nice to be able to show, you know, to kind of like open ourselves up to other people too. But having that family reunion is something people need. You know, people need this type of interaction, because people like Bitcoiners feel so alone, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing that really surprised me coming to these like meetups. I'm like, I realized how much they're like needed for the average person going to them. Like I don't know, I guess I never like I never needed that. Like, I'm just like out here being a stubborn person and like not caring what people think and just living my life. But I think a lot of people need to resonate with other people that get them. They want to connect with people that.
I didn't think I needed it either, because I can, even though I'm a hairdresser and I speak all the time to people and I talk, usually when I get home from work, I don't want to talk anymore. Like I'm done talking. You know, I've talked so much, but I'm not usually the type of person who wants interaction. I'm usually the one, you know, going down rabbit holes and studying things, and I'm not like going out with friends. Like I don't, you know, I feel like it's okay for me to say that I don't have friends. But then now with Bitcoin, I have friends. Like I've actually made friends, and it makes me so happy. But I never thought I needed it, and I was okay with it. Like my husband's the one that has all friends, you know, and it's always his friends and me, you know, like I'm just hanging out with them. And it's cool. When I'm with them, I'm having fun. You know, I know how to be happy and have fun, you know, but I just don't look for that on my own. So that's why I think my husband's a little he thinks it's a little funny that I'm the one now who's like bringing us around a new group of people, and he loves them, you know. So it's like, okay, this is happening. It's just very different
Yeah,
for us.
I think it's everybody needs every like facet of life needs to be covered, right, for the Bitcoin community. So like, just because I don't need it personally, but I enjoy it, I just never needed it before. I think that's the only reason why I didn't reach out. But when I'm in that like space, I'm really noticing how much it's like a positive Bitcoiners to meet up. And like, the thing I hate most, and this is no disrespect to any meetup, I hate that it's not our own space. I hate that we're stuffed in a corner because you reserved a table, and then there's like a bunch of other stuff that's just noise going on around us. I want that to be exclusive for us, like that's what I think we deserve. And I think like we should be making a splash. We should not be off in the corner and the oh, there's the Bitcoin. Like, no, we should be buying the whole venue out, and we should be having a party. And the people that are normies are gonna look at that and be like, oh, that looks like a lot of fun. why are they doing this? Like, what's going on? And then that's how we like build the community bigger. You know, that's
and
my
even
dream anyways.
The way you did with your event, it was amazing. It was private. You know, we got to actually talk and feel like we, it was so much fun. Like it was, you know, I don't know, learning so much about everybody, but just having fun, having room to move around. And also you had your signs up on the window. So anyone's passing by that was trying to come in, they're like, oh, closed for a private event and it's for Bitcoin. What is this? You know? So it's like, they're trying to come in, but it was closed. It's reserved, you know? So it's like, wow. Okay. That gets them thinking like these people booked out a restaurant, you know? That's cool. Yeah. That's definitely powerful, especially in a little downtown area where people are trying to come in and they can't get in because it's for Bitcoiners, you know, so if you want to be
part of I mean, the exclusivity idea is like intentional, though. And we want to have open ones to the public as well.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying just do only exclusive only.
Right.
The exclusivity makes you think, like, what is this? You know, why can't I be there? Right. And you can be. I don't care. Like, just it's private, invite only. Right. So RSVP, come. It doesn't matter. But yeah, you have to like at least sign up on the list. I think it just opens up people's minds a little bit more. They'll think twice about what's going on when they see these bigger events. So, anyways, I digress. On the list.
Yes, I love all of these ideas. I think it's great. And it's great that you are a thinker and you are a builder, you know, and you have, you know, built so many things and you're building these great ideas that, you know, putting them to work and actually getting it to be real. You know, you're not just having ideas, you're putting it into action. But just seeing that the community aspect and just getting out there, even if you didn't think you needed it before, and just doing it now, like you're getting ideas. Like it's like crazy how you get ideas from other Bitcoiners. And it's like every time you're around Bitcoiners or you see Bitcoiners interact, you think it gives you ideas. It gives you more things. Like you didn't think you'd have maybe some of these ideas.
Yeah, the most powerful thing is the network effect. You know, like everybody is plugged in with someone that is useful, or they are directly like extremely useful themselves, whether it's like they know how to like do something on the technical side with hardware wallets or like, you know, the software side. Like you meet a lot of the tech guys or the developers that are in the Chicago meetups, and you know, and then other people like, you know, Greg Kramer. I don't know, I just met Greg, and like I really don't know his background, but like he's just plugging me in with everybody because him and I got along and he likes what I'm doing. I'm like, thank you, dude. Like, that's so nice of you. It's just, it's a wonderful networking opportunity just to go to these meetups, you know?
Yes.
Powerful.
I mean, I didn't know when he was talking, he was at your event, then he was at ours. And then I thought he's the coolest person. Like he was just, you know, like an OG, you know, like he's been around. He's known Lawrence Lepard for years. He does spaces with him and Tomer, you know, they've known each other. I don't know. I just don't know. You know, you just don't know who is around you, who's coming to these things. And when they introduce themselves and you find out, you're like, this is amazing. Like, wow, what a cool person. And you're just like talking to everybody and part of this, like you want to connect. You think some of these people wouldn't want to connect, but they're there and they need the connection too.
And we're so early. So like, even though like we have these big, like influential people, these, you know, that like are on podcasts or they build companies. I was thinking about that recently. Like we're like 16 years into a brand new like economy, essentially. It's an asset class, but it's like, it's the new economy. We're 16 years into it. You know how early we are? Like, it's crazy. What we're building right now is so early on that like you could start something right now and you're not late. Like you're ahead of everybody. And like the opportunity is massive, you know, like it's beautiful.
Saying it the way you said it is, I mean, I know that Bitcoin is 16 years old, but when you say it that way, it like really just like hit me. Cause it's, if you think about when money first came out, the first 16 years of dollars, you know, it's insane. That's hard to kind of understand that, like to realize that you're living in this.
Imagine like 6,000 years ago, you were like obsessed with gold and everyone's like, I'm going to trade my chickens actually, or whatever. I don't know whatever the barter system was before the bimetallic era of money, but like you were obsessed with gold. You're like, gold's the greatest shit ever. And like, it's just you and a few other friends. And then like you fast forward thousands of years later and like gold's the currency, right?
They're like wearing it. They're like, don't you want some of this? Look how it shines.
We were just a blimp in the history of the timeline right now, but like we are setting the financial future for the world. And that, and to me, it's not guaranteed. It's almost guaranteed. It's a high probability. It's a higher probability today than it was last year and the year before. But that's why it's so important we work hard to get everybody else adopting this and understanding this and being like advocates in their personal and professional lives for Bitcoin. Because this is our greatest shot to saving the planet, like saving the human existence, you know, from an economic perspective. Like fiat,
from an economic perspective, you know, even I think from a, you know, environmental perspective too, because, yeah, you know, greed, you know, we know that there's reasons why Bitcoin can help save the world environmentally too. You know, there's so many things that Bitcoin can touch. So it's just, it's amazing.
It just like resets the incentives from a macro perspective, you know, and a micro perspective. If you want to do malicious things in life and be a bad actor, there will be a price to pay when you have to like spend real money. And it's not cheap fiat. Like if you cause an environmental disaster, cool, good luck, like trying to like not be a bankrupted company anymore. And like, you know, these grants that are freely given out to like massive corporations that have damaged the environment, like it really, it makes everyone more responsible because there's a cost to irresponsible malallocations of capital. So like even war itself will be difficult to manage, you know, because there needs to be a payoff. If you look at it from a business perspective, you need to acquire some economic gain in order to like go to war. Otherwise you're just bleeding money. But it doesn't matter in the fiat world, right? Because you just print the money and you like put the burden onto the people through inflation.
It's horrible. I just don't understand how people don't get that. It's like every time there's all this money sent out for a war, it's like they're just creating this stuff on your back, you know? And people think it's like, oh, it's our tax money. It's like, it's not even your tax money. It's literally your, you know, your economic, you know, whatever your output is now, it's like worth less. Like everything is worth less. So it's like you're earning the same amount and now it costs you more for everything because they're printing all this money. So it's not even just the tax. It's like, yes, they're raising taxes, but they're silently taxing you and you don't have a vote. You know, you can't vote yes, do this or don't do this. They do it anyway. They don't care. So it's just, you know, enough is enough. And I think that's why the more people that see it, and the more people, if they can't see it, you know, even if you do it the way you're doing it, where the parents, you know, learn from their kids, you know, scholarship fund growing, you know, they'll learn that way. So, and then it would even be amazing if you could do that. Because when people see that this type of model is federated, right? I did it. it's one of those things that when people see that this is a good thing and it's working and it's something they want to do maybe for their own kids, then they can do time locking of their own, you know, so instead of buying a kid a bond or something when they were born, like people used to do, which is a terrible idea. But like when, so now it's like people do Bright Start, you know, I think this is going to just end Bright Start. I don't know if you know what Bright Start is, but it's like where you, it's like something where you save like for your kid for college, and everyone's like, start one of those right away when you have kids. Like me and my husband did that. You know, so they have Bright Start accounts. And then at one day you get to like, you put a certain amount every year, you know, like $250 a year per kid from the time they're born. So you can have like a college fund because it's like invested. Yeah, yeah. But it's like by the time they're going to need it, it's going to cover like half a semester. You know, by the time they go to college, like, what is it going to do for them? And that's $250 a year. So if parents could do this with their own kids and put $500 per kid in a time-locked Bitcoin fund and watch it for their own kid, that's like another thing that I think parents should, like, it would be something that people would want to do for their own kids instead of some stupid Bright Start account. It's terrible.
Agreed, yeah. I mean, if you just assume like a very conservative CAGR on Bitcoin, $500 today for a five-year-old and they access that in 20 years at 25, you're talking about $95,000 USD, whatever. I mean, who knows, just for inflation, whatever that purchasing power would be. But like still, like the growth is just, you know, there is no other best asset to be in. I mean, there has been periodically, you know, whether it's like Nvidia or something or AI stocks, consistently, there's never been a better asset to just for the long-term store your value. Yeah, you touched on something earlier. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No.
Yeah, I was going to reiterate something that you were saying, you know, basically You mentioned Jack Mahler's talk about like money is the abstraction of economic energy. And that is really what like I think changed my mind. I don't know if it's him that said that, but this has been said quite often. But like, to me, when you boil down money, and this is what I want to really drive home for a lot of people, you boil down the money or the cost of anything, it's like two things. It's the cost of energy, like actual energy, whether it's chemical, mechanical, or electrical, and then labor. And so for us as humans at work, it's always our time. That's like what we trade for currency, right? We trade our time. And so it's an abstraction of our time and value that we provide to the economy. And when the government prints money, they are stealing your time that you've dedicated previously. They are literally stealing your time. Inflation is time theft. And like, that's like, I don't know, I just wanted to circle back and like really highlight that.
Right. It is time theft. And that's why it's the worst kind of theft, because time is your most, like, besides Bitcoin, it's your most valuable asset that you have. You don't know how much of it you have. You know, it could, you know, it's finite, and they're stealing that from you. You know, they're stealing time you could be spending doing something that makes you happy, or making connections with family or friends, or doing something for your kids that's going to, you know, I don't know. There's so many ways that time theft is the worst thing that anyone could ever do for, like, and not even ask you permission to do it, you know? And that's why it's infuriating. And that's why you start off like the stages of being a Bitcoiner. You like yell at them, like, you should just get this, like, just, you know what I mean? Cause you're just like angry about it, you know, when you find out, cause it's an infuriating thing. But yeah, time theft, that's exactly what inflation is. And anyone who thinks that that's an okay thing that the government's doing, but you know, we'll see what's, it's hard to think about how things are going to unfold. But I know that, I don't know, there's also parts of me that think of Jeff Booth talking about deflationary future with technology and AI. And I sometimes think that when people talk, like, when is that going to hit? Because it hasn't hit yet. Because I think the money printing is just going to an extreme level. Because I think that this is going to hit at some point. And yeah. I think when people talk about when Bitcoin's worth $95,000 or whatever it is, like a $500, you know, investment in a Bitcoin scholarship fund thing would be like worth that much. But you think, what would the dollar be? But I think that might be actually holding its value at that point, because maybe deflation will finally hit. I don't know.
It won't work that way. No. So yeah, if you let the dollar, you know, if you allow deflation to unfold, that's like contagion problems. You know, you need to have the dollar weaken, you need to print into the deflation. So you have like a, you know, the idea of Keynesian economics is basically economic like innovation and like efficiency gains are deflationary, right? You can make more things with less energy or less people, less, you know, labor. And so you can print money into that, right? So there's actually more economic energy. So you can, you know, have in the perfect Keynesian model, if you grow the economic energy and the monetary base at the same time, there's no inflation, right? But they've accepted 2%. So they're growing, if it's truly 2%, they're growing the money supply 2% faster than economic expansion year over year. So as we look at like AI deflation, where's the deflation coming from? And where it's coming from is the reduction of actual labor necessary to provide a product or service, typically, you know, services in this case. But and how do they do that? Well, they reduce the number of humans needed to do any certain repetitious task, right? So we have a problem on the job side in the short term. So you see all these major companies laying off people. And so it'll make the services that they provide or the products that they provide cheaper to the end consumer, but there's a jobs issue right there in the immediate term. And then that's beautiful for the government, because if they have more efficiency, they can print into that, right? And so as long as the economy expands, but with Bitcoin, the deflationary elements strengthen the currency, right? Yeah. They strengthen any currency. I think that's going to be a big problem. And I think we'll see more socialism spread, politically speaking, because like the cost of living is just going to go higher. The government has like an immense debt burden. We run like whatever $2.4 trillion deficits every single year and growing. So the money printer won't stop. It can't stop. Like the federal government will hard default if they don't print more dollars to service old debt. And so their best bet for kicking the can down the road is, you know, softly defaulting and then finding any area that is a massive economic deflationary force and like leaning into that so they can print dollars it's not inflationarily felt. But AI is just going to reduce like a massive job market that was previously there, and it's just like completely eradicated. So it kind of is just a double-edged sword. Things will get cheaper, but like your like job base is going to dwindle. So it's kind of duality that's very problematic going forward.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. That's the thing. It's like, and even though you're seeing that, you still feel like I'm okay because I have Bitcoin, you know, but that's why you want to do that for others, because you know that this could be problematic. It is still worrisome, but it's not like something we can control, you know? So I think that's another thing. It's like, focus on the things you can control and, you know, do things that you know, the changes you can make. So being able to see these types of things happen, or foresee them and have it feel worrisome, but not to yourself, is the reason why you're doing what you're doing and helping these kids and helping with all the things, all the moves you're making, is because it's this type of thing that, you know, that aerial view that you have on things and why it's so important to help.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we haven't touched on it. The Midwest Bitcoin Summit is kind of the broader view of that same thing. You know, I talked about the family reunion idea, but you know, the Midwest Bitcoin Summit is about really bringing Bitcoin to the city level, the commerce level, the individual level, and like having a big event that, again, it just like gets the public's attention. Because, you know, BTC Inc. has done a fantastic job of approaching conferences globally, you know, internationally and in the United States at a very high level, the national level. And they engage with national politicians or the federal government politicians, as well as the state, you know, governors. And really, like, that's their main focus. And they've done a fantastic job. But like, for me, I'm more on like the micro scale economy approach. I want to really get engaged with the mayors, the aldermen, the state reps, you know, and at the highest level of governor would be like our top focus, I guess, at that level. But like, we want more than anything to get the business owners, the private owned companies, that they can adopt Bitcoin. They can have a strategy on their balance sheet for Bitcoin. They can accept it. They can become part of the circular economy around Bitcoin. That's what this conference is about, is like getting that influence and that like exposure to those individuals.
Yes. I think, yeah. I love all that. And I'm thinking, you know, this is crazy, but like, maybe, I don't know, I just like to say crazy ideas, but you know, who knows, just why not?
Okay.
Like, parades get a lot of attention and they get a lot of news coverage, so that'd be kind of nuts. But then even like, then you think about parades and you think about nationwide things and you're like, why don't we have a Bitcoin day, you know, yet?
Yeah, honestly. I mean, while we have, you know, the first Bitcoin president in power, why don't we push that idea somewhere?
Why don't we get a Bitcoin day? I mean, honestly, like, we should.
Yeah.
It's as Bitcoiners, like, this is the day that we would be like, yes, we would want that. But like, that would get recognition to be like, now we're doing parades all over the nation on this day and people are seeing it. No, I don't know.
Or like at least like a Satoshi Nakamoto day, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
In memory of Satoshi.
Right. Yeah. Let's
or white paper. Yeah, whatever. I think it's a great idea because, yeah, it's, then you get national attention to something.
Yeah. Right. And then everyone can do their little pockets of, hey, it's a day that we're all going to plan for and just do something, you know, just so everyone knows it's Bitcoin day. Because it's like, I was just thinking about like the Midwest Bitcoin Summit being like, get the, like, put up flyers, posters. But I'm like, then my brain was going to a marching band and I'm like, let's get some. I'm nuts. I don't know. Like, whatever.
No, I like it. I like it. I think, you know, these ideas I love. And have you ever been to like the west side of Michigan?
Yes.
Like on the lake, you know, you ever heard of St. Joe, Michigan?
Yes, I've been there. Michigan? Yeah.
Yeah. St. Joe is like, that's where I'm going to retire. That's my favorite place on earth. I don't, you know, barring the winters, but St. Joe has this like kind of old school, like, classic American, but also like affluent because like Chicago's right nearby. But like, they have like the farmer market every Saturday morning, and there's like a strong communal type of like ecosystem there. Mm-hmm. I wanted forever, I've never lived there, but I wanted forever to like Orangeville the shit out of St. Joe and then like have a Bitcoin base where we do these, you know, festivals and we do like the, you know, parades and stuff like that, because it's a community that like you could do it there, and like, they already do that stuff already.
That's true. It is the type of, because it's like a little artsy, I think a little different, that community, right? Yeah, I remember staying at a bed and breakfast there once with my husband, and it was like such a cool town. It was,
yeah,
I love it. And it's not far from us, you know, so it's, it wasn't too bad of a drive. But yeah, those are the kind of things that some town that's like kind of like hip, or you know what I mean? They're open to art galleries and different things there. So I think it'd be
It's very
definitely.
artsy, farmer markety, but then you have like one of the greatest beaches in Michigan right there in St. Joe. And so like, oh yeah, it's as close as you'll get to the ocean is like Lake Michigan. Pretty warm in the summertime. It's awesome. There's no sharks or jellyfish, so you don't have to worry
That's
about that.
such a great idea. That could
Yeah,
be like a
we should do it
Bitcoin
there.
festival town place. That's so awesome. Yes.
Yeah,
We're
well,
making plans, guys. Everybody watching.
logistically, it's the only problem is there's no major airport. You could do like Grand Rapids Airport. There's a private airport just north of there that was servicing like Whirlpool. Their headquarters is over in like Baton Harbor. But yeah, it's a logistical nightmare for people to try to fly in and drive over there. So that's the only negative, I
How far
suppose.
away is that Grand Rapids Airport?
I think it's about 1 hour 20, something like
Okay.
that. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be kind
I
of
would have
annoying.
been able to
But
do
so
it.
many times you travel on vacation, you have to drive like 40 minutes to get somewhere. So I guess it's
Yeah.
not a ton further. But yeah, that
Well,
is kind of a little, but we'll figure it out. We'll figure out stuff. Plus, you know, people could drive if they're in the area. You know, so many people even that came out to our event drove like 6 hours to get there. So anyone who's in the sort of nearby area would just drive in, you know. So I think Bitcoiners find a way just because they love the energy and they love being around other people and doing things like this. It's like the best thing ever. And people, you know, when you make friends, they enjoy their time together, they'll especially make it a point to come back. And then I think others will flock out too. So I don't know. I see it happening.
All right. Well, you just motivated me. I'm going to do a Michigan
Yes.
meetup in St.
Oh
Joe,
my gosh,
and
that's amazing.
it's going to be, I think, close enough to Chicago that we can pull like the individuals out in the Chicagoland area because it's only going to be like a 2 hour drive at most for
Yeah.
most people.
Yeah.
And then all of Michigan can come on over. And then I don't know if you know Amber Harris from the Michigan Bitcoin Trade Council, but she's been like my first contact in the Bitcoin space over in Michigan, and like they have a huge following. They have you ever heard of Lake Satoshi? It's like north of Lansing.
No.
Shoot, I forget his name. To Mike or Jeff, the property owner,
Okay.
he sits on the board of the trade council there, and like they do massive meetups in Michigan. And he has this
Really?
30-acre lake that he dug himself, which is crazy because there's so many
That's
lakes in
amazing.
Michigan. Yeah, and like they have a compound with like like little cabins you can rent out, and it's all Bitcoin focused. The whole thing is it's like 100 acres or something.
That's amazing. How far away from St. Joe is that?
So it's in the center of the state, so as a traditional Michigander would show you, it's about like right here.
Okay.
St. Joe's
Yeah.
down here. Yeah. So
Okay.
it's maybe like 2.5 hours, 3 hours or something.
Yeah.
But
Well, that is just really awesome because then it would bring other people from the area too if they're already a big Bitcoin community. That's amazing. Yeah,
They have
that's so
massive
exciting.
turnout, like 300 people, and they host like a really cool summer like party and camp out type thing. So definitely get plugged in with that.
Yes. So, yes, you got to send me their info because I want to follow them and do all that. But this is so awesome. I can't wait to tell George. I'm like, he said that he I convinced him to do this. This is amazing. I'm so excited. I'm excited for all the stuff, you know? So this is just really, I don't know, like I'm looking for you look forward to so much, I think, in Bitcoin. So this is more things that I'm looking forward to. So thank you so much for your time today. We had such a great talk. I can't wait to do more of these meetups, to be part of it, to help you however you want help, spread the word on whatever you're doing. So this is just, you know, the beginning. You know, we're at the beginning of this whole new thing.
Indeed. Yeah. Thank you so much. This is again, my first podcast. It's been an honor to be on your show. I love the conversation. Obviously, like we were going to see each other in real life. I mean, you guys can, I guess the listeners can check out the Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation. The website's btcsf.org or Midwest Bitcoin Summit, which is Midwest, all spelled out, btc.com.
Good job. Yes. And then you could
Been
find him
fun.
on X and I think the Orange Pill app. Are you on the Orange Pill app
On
too?
Orangeville app, yeah. So just
Yes.
my first and last name, don't wrench attack me. Andrew Tillman, TILMANN. Yeah. No nim, no nothing. I'm just out in the public's eye. So
Yeah, that's what happens when you start to become a Bitcoin, you know, builder. You know, that's what happens. But thank you so
yeah.
much for joining me. This is amazing. I'm so honored to be your first host. So I can't wait till you do more podcasts and, you know, you're amazing and I can't wait to hear more about what you do on other people's shows. I'd love to watch and keep up with all you're doing.
All right.
So thank
Thanks,
you.
Stacey.
Have a great day. Take care.
Cheers, love. Bye.